Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt, here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it! That surely is the Grand Slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass, and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That is a big cheer. Hello to everybody at Vodafone. We're very happy to be here, a special Monday Night Rugby on a sad weekend for Irish rugby, but we're very happy to be here nonetheless. We're joined by Ronan O'Gara. And even more excitingly, Alan Quinlan's here, everyone.
Oh, yes. There we go.
So we're very happy to be here. Our rugby coverage is now brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. And we're talking about the opening weekend of the Six Nations. So, where do we start with Ireland 20, England 32? Ronan, where do we jump in? There are many talking points here. Disappointment is the overwhelming feeling.
Yeah, shock potentially. I think I envisaged a lot of scenarios on Saturday morning when you're trying to give a detailed analysis of what potentially could go on in the Aviva, but I didn't see that one. And it's easy to pick hole in the Irish performance. So sometimes you got to go that they were really good. They were really good. I watched, obviously, the Vinopal as they've been injured, but I've watched them a lot, and I've watched Itoje play, and I watched Farrell play a lot, and I watched Ben Youngs play a lot. And these guys had, I suppose, in athletics, they kind of nearly had PBs. They were really good, Joe. Really good.
Did alarm bells go off for you early on, Alan?
Alarm bells went off before the game for me because I just had this sense that it was going to be a difficult day. I don't know why. I obviously, when you analyse the game and there's a build-up for during the week, the evidence that we presented in front of us, we have to work off that. So Ireland were coming into the tournament after having a fantastic 2018. The Irish provinces, the players, the form was exceptional. Three provinces in the knockout stages of Europe. So you're kind of basing it off that, and you don't expect, you're aware of the threat of a very good English side on paper. And during the week, I think, you know, look, one of the questions that was asked was how many English players would get into the Irish team, and very few last week, and that's legitimate. Ask the same question now, and there's a lot more. It's completely split, and that's down to, you know, a big performance in a big game, and it was just, there was a lot on the line first game up, and I think two of the heavyweights. So as I got to Saturday, I don't know, I just got this sense of feeling that maybe, and it's hard to get the emotion right, and Ron will tell you as well, and anyone who plays sport, it's when you're winning and when you're on the top, the challenge is how do you stay there? How do you make sure that tiny couple of percent is accelerating all the time emotionally? And Ireland spoke all last week about, they knew exactly about the physicality, the brutality, the quality, the effectiveness that this English side could bring. And still, you just look and you say, why physically were we dominated at times? Why were we stopped on the game line? Why didn't we have a plan B? Why couldn't we cope on the run? And it's very difficult as players out on the field at times to do that, particularly when you believe that you can keep turning it around. And right up to the 65th minute, there was 4 points in it. You know, there was very little, there were small margins, even though, and England didn't play a huge amount of rugby as a sense, but when they played in spurts, they were very, very effective. They kicked well, but the biggest thing was physically they stopped Ireland getting over the gain line.
Yeah.
And in turn then the ball is really slow. So it just kind of played out as I felt before the game. The nervousness just continued throughout, and I was like, I could kind of see the result, but not the manner of the result.
There's
that makes sense.
It does, yeah. There's a statistic that was doing the rounds and has been doing the rounds, Ronan, and it ties in with Alan's point about just their size. So dominant tackles, they had 46 to Ireland's 9 dominant tackles. And all week people talked about the Vunipolas and talked about Manu Tuilagi. But it was never talked about in terms of something that Ireland would not be able to overcome. It was just an aspect of the game that Ireland will have to allow for and plan for and be ready for, but they'll be fine. And actually, it emerged pretty quickly that Ireland were not getting over the game line and England massively were. So talk to us about that, because that seemed to take people a little bit by surprise.
No, but you're right. I think we're all experts after the event, but that is exactly what happened. But if you look at it, I suppose you ask why, and I think the Irish psyche is really suited to having that fear factor, but with the 2018, it's very hard to create that when you're kind of a steamroll and you're bashing everyone out of your way that's been presented over that year. So, you know, I mean, we know James Ryan's CV as a professional rugby player. He doesn't know what losing looks like. But he got a big belt on Saturday. But before that, it was kind of, he's going to prepare, do what he does every week, and we get a performance and a result. But I think you got to put yourself in the shoes of the English players. So there comes a point in time when you say, I've had enough. And I kind of, that was for us in Munster, was probably 2009 from Leinster, just had enough. And that was kind of what seemed to me on Saturday. England had enough of hearing how great Ireland are. Ireland are going to win the World Cup. And these guys are serious players.
So in your experience, that game line contest
yes.
can come down to who wants it more at times.
No, but there has to be, obviously, there's two sides to it. That's the emotional side. But yeah. like there
so
has
that's
to
what
be
you're talking about now. So for instance, explain to me, Tadhg Furlong, 8 carries, 5 metres. James Ryan, 16 carries, 17 metres.
Yeah,
we're not used to those stats.
I think the initial point of contact, the focus was to make sure there's a real wrestling match and that is a couple of seconds slow. So then when that's a couple of seconds slow, Joe, they realign with 3, 4, 5 guys on the fringe and they say, right, now it's slower, we can get off the line, so we're going to double team. So we're going to go low and Furlong, high and Furlong, knock him back. That's a mess. Ireland are back 2 or 3 yards. Then the next one, we're off the line again. It's another mess. So that's how you do it. It's the first point.
Yeah. So that's not just emotional. I want to
know. No, it's intelligence.
That's brilliant play.
It's intelligence because, and I think they probably give 10 days in the Algarve. And I'd be very surprised if I'm wrong on this, that they probably focused on how do we stop Ireland rather than how do we play well. Of course, they probably, you know, they still had to go through their own stuff and attack. But I would imagine the vast majority of that is slow Ireland down, make it a dogfight, Murray's digging for the ball, and when the ball is passed to the runners, make sure that we've 2 or 3 smashing them. If you knock that dead on the gain line or even behind it, the next one is going to be slow. And if it goes back to Sexton, we're just off the line like a bullet. And then, you know, he kicks or he kicks loosely or they try to run it and we force another mistake. It all sounds quite simple, but it just comes from the little detail. They identified the breakdown really well at times then when it wasn't contestable. They just let it alone and they got numbers on their feet. So they said, okay, we're not going to turn Ireland over. Ireland lost 2 rucks in 138. They had 136, they won. England had 82 rucks and they won 82.
Yeah.
That just tells you how efficient both sides were. But Ben Youngs's ball and John and Farrell's ball was much quicker. And it makes a difference. And when I said a minute ago, I think we tried to problem solve then and believed because we're a possession-based side and a lot of the success in 2018 is built on fit multi-phase over and back and we're patient. That suited England perfect because all that play was in our own half. And then when the little mistake or the turnover or the opportunity to go after Ireland and force the turnover and you could hear him screeching on the ref mic. They were getting, isn't that right, Rog? You get that energy then as a player. Sometimes it's easier to just not have the ball because you're getting that energy is increasing and the emotion is going, Ireland's going down and theirs is going up.
It's the first time in a long time Ireland have been contained like that, isn't it?
I don't think I've seen it before, Joe. I wouldn't, you know what I mean, being contained like that, I wouldn't even use those words. It was
the New Zealand game 2 years ago, maybe, in Dublin, wasn't it? That one was brutal physicality.
Yeah, but I still think Ireland made more of a dent in their phase game. This weekend, it was
going nowhere.
Well, we didn't. Like, Cian Healy got the score, but it was kind of from a great kick to touch and a picking goals near the line.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, it was England's line speed, but their spacing before they got the line speed is what interests me. They were really, really, I think, consistent in how they read us.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they had 4 metres, probably 5 metres every time between individuals, and they just hissed off the line, and their tackle technique was really good. And that was, as Alan said, like, you kind of have, if you're not winning the game line after the first two phases and then slow ball, you need a genius to win it on the third or fourth phase. So it's kind of like, how do I turn a potential, well, it's a negative into positive? Shane, we kept playing.
Shane Horgan made the point that maybe in those initial 2-3 phases, Ireland could have thought about kicking. Because once you go through those 2-3-4 phases, you're penned in. They seem to be set in the backfield. There's nowhere really to kick. Mm. And it's just your worst nightmare somewhere around your own 22 line. So are you surprised Ireland didn't kick more? Would that have been worth trying a bit more?
Yeah, I would have, yeah. But I think probably also when we did kick, we were kicking off neutral at best. You know what I mean? So for the two guys that are kicking, it's huge in my mind as a kicker that you're getting some bit of a forward momentum, mm. even if it's a little tiny drive,
inch, yeah.
you know, honestly, because like going back to kick is really hard, Joe.
Yeah.
And static is hard, but like if there's any bit of a crawl forward, you're able to kind of walk into your kick.
Mm. You made that point, didn't you? The kick run where Farrell was nearly taking it going forward.
Yeah.
Sexton was nearly taking it backwards, and it makes such a difference. I would have been happy as a forward there in the English pack the other day just to be going up and down the field. And for Ireland, I think maybe we probably should have. But some of all the problems here for me were up front. You can play as a 10 or a 9 or a 10, and Murray and Sexton had tough days at the office, and maybe some of their decisions and some of their execution wasn't great. But, you know, the Irish pack have to take accountability here. They got physically kind of shuffled around the place and they were battered backwards. And even some of the lineouts we won, the delivery was very poor down to Conor Murray.
Yeah.
So he's trying to take it off the top and hit Sexton or Bundiaki flat. And it's just floaty and slow and late. And they just didn't get that dynamism that you want running onto the ball. And England, it's just pressure all over every facet of the game. And we didn't cope well. I think it's a real character tester and a real challenge, and I think they haven't become a bad team overnight. It just got worse and progressively worse as the game went on. But there was a massive moment in the 65th where I thought it was a forward pass. It was a big turning point. There was only 4 points in the game. 4 points.
Yeah.
I felt we would have had a moment to get up there at some stage, but territory was a big problem as well, you know.
Yeah.
And we were only in there 22 three times. We scored once and came out pretty
11%
quickly.
11% of the time. Did you think it was a forward pass?
No.
Explain to Quinny why it wasn't.
We already...
Please do.
We've talked for 3 hours about this.
Give us the abridged notes, would
look,
you?
It's one of those ones
No,
where
I want him to explain it to you.
Yeah, well...
Because we all know... I've been asking since Saturday. We
why.
All know why you think it was forward.
And I looked at the World Rugby stuff today and the ruling on that. And I want... You know, I've been chatting to referees over the weekend and lots of people and everyone. There's a valid... Maybe... There is an argument to say that velocity takes the ball forward anyway, and that it's inevitably going to move a little bit forward, but not 3.5-4 meters for me. That's just too much. A meter maybe, or a meter and a half, but not 4 meters.
Ron,
is it? I looked it up and it was law of 12.2, was it?
Yeah.
And it states as long as the action of the hands are backward, the ball at that speed. When you're running at a full tight side, where the side angle and the ball, it's a line ball. Obviously, it's 3.4 metres forward, according to that. But you look where Slade is, like, it's what you teach every kid is about getting a second touch. Like, he accelerates onto the pass. After the pass, he's there, nearly ahead of the kicker because of the momentum he's generated from passing with such precision. You know, I mean, I think that's the problem with analysing stuff. If you stop it and watch it on a laptop, you can say it's a forward pass. I thought in live sport but it was play on.
My initial thought, being right bang in the halfway doing the commentary, was that's a forward pass without seeing any replays. I thought Garces should have had a look at it. because then you have a debate, yeah, and then you say, right, and if he goes then, and if he says the velocity and all that stuff, well, then it shuts me up and says I'm wrong, and that's fine. But he needs to have a look at it. It's too big a call, and I thought Rory Best tried to ask him to look at it. Mm. He should have been stronger. It was a massive, massive moment. His TMO is talking to him in his ear, saying, do you want to see the potential forward pass? He said it to him twice, and he said, no, I'm happy with it. Yeah. Now, we want referees to have more on-field presence, and that's the whole idea of it. But just before that, and I know I'm clutching at straws here, because this is the biggest moment in the game, I think. It's game over for Ireland, whatever chance we have. Robbie Henshaw runs up from the box kick from Murray. He taps it back in field. It hits Henry Slade's hand. It's a knock-on. Jerome Garces puts out his right hand. Advantage Ireland. Rory Best tackle. Pass to James Ryan, tackle. Pass to Gary Ringrose, knock-on for the scrum. He never once said advantage over.
Or if he did, his mic was out at that exact
moment.
There
was nothing wrong with his mic when CJ Stander was trying to pick the ball up from Ben Youngs.
No, I didn't hear him say it either.
No, he didn't say it. Yeah. And he didn't indicate it was over. So it should have been a scrum back to Ireland.
Yeah.
Did we still deserve to win the game? Now, I think the Makavunopolo one before halftime was potentially...
Okay. But on balance, the referee is not the reason.
No,
Ireland
not at all.
But he was the worst referee possible for us in a dogfight, because he doesn't handle, you know, competitiveness and guys going in off their feet and a real aggressive approach. You know, I thought you needed a stronger referee for that.
He lets too much go for you.
Yeah, and he misses too much stuff.
Do you agree
for
with
both
that?
Sides. I thought Vunipola's try was a try in the first half for England, and I said it in commentary. If England lose this game, Eddie Jones is not going to be happy with that. In slow motion, it looks like a double movement. In real time, it's a try.
Agree with that on Garces?
No, I would be kind of the opinion you just take him out of the equation. You know, I mean, usually these things over a campaign will even themselves out.
Okay.
So
to wrap up the gain line discussion, their physicality versus Ireland, the quality of their tackling, so it's not just heft and brute force against Ireland, putting on your coach's hat, let's assume England can play like that again and tackle like that again. What do Ireland need to do with the ball to not be so badly affected?
A general question.
No, it's not.
I'm interested in this one as well.
No,
as the coach.
If you're Coach O'Gara down the line and you've had a day like that, and the team are saying, right, they destroyed us in the tackle, we couldn't get over the gain line, what do you reckon we should do?
Well, if they're destroying you in the tackle, you've got to sort that out first. So, carries. So, are you going to kind of play off 9 or play off 10 is a potential scenario. Can you play out the back of both of them? In terms of, you know, so you play with the way the game is going, you kind of play 1-3-2-2 in terms of 7, or the Lucy will go to the far ruck, and then you'll have 3 forwards, 2 forwards, 2 forwards. Mm-hmm. So, like, the most important one, Joe, is your first carry. So, if they are really tight, you probably play those. If you have A, B, and C, you hit B, so B can tip to C, mm-hmm, or B can play out the back to 10. Then, so defender 1, 2, 3, 4. So where are you looking for a potential weakness in their D line? And their spacing for England was really good from ruck to probably 8 out. So maybe Ireland could have got him with these 2 forwards here to get him. So if you play B out the back to 10 can kind of play D and E. Do you get me? And then you'd have 12 out the back of D and E.
We need a flip chart for this, Joe.
I understand
what he's saying.
So,
but Ireland didn't have that kind of variation, did they?
No, because we got blitzed in the first contact, really. You know, that was my point in terms of, and I think how the halfbacks can help the forwards in that situation is by recognising we're not going anywhere here.
Yeah.
Let's kind of cut our losses after 2 as opposed to 7 phases.
Yeah. So, and change that point of contact, change the area you're trying to attack them.
Like, Joe, it's easy for me sitting on my high stool.
No, I know that.
But there has to be space somewhere. Look at, you know what I mean, England, in fairness to them, when they carried, they had a real intent in their carry, but also, how many times did we bombard Earls when he was isolated? Like, it's smart play too. It's not just all brute force.
Yeah.
How many times were their balls played through? How many times did they find grass? So it's about mixing up your game.
And to a point, are Ireland victims in the sense that that approach that wasn't working on Saturday has worked for them so often? As in, they've been getting over the game line in those first phases.
And that's why...
So this is the first time we've had to really deal with this kind of crisis.
Correct. And it's... I would say with that experience the lads got on Saturday, they'll be far better for in the future. But like, I've been in that situation before when you've kind of prepped all week and it's gone well and you're kind of going, help me out here.
Yeah.
What's going on? And but like the visor hearts are going like that and they're getting smashed by white jerseys.
And would you think Schmidt and the team had planned during the week for the possibility that what they usually do and what usually works was not going to work at all and would have had a plan B? It doesn't seem like they did.
I know, I would say that, like, to be fair, they did have...
Plan B is so hard to execute when you're losing the physical side of rugby.
Okay.
First and foremost, it's physicality.
Well, like collisions, maybe for people to understand, like, in terms of the rugby mindset, the player's mindset, like, plan A and plan D doesn't really exist. You have a kind of portfolio of plays if you're the, you know what I mean, if you're the key driver on the team. So Johnny would have a portfolio of plays, kind of like options, 10 probably power plays off a line out and maybe 6 strikes off scrum.
Yeah.
But like the plan A and plan B, it's not like, it's completely different. Like it's, you have suggested moves based on detailed analysis where we feel we can find a chink in their D-line. Mm. But I think that is the key point, the fact that because of how good and how well prepped they are under Joe, I think there was a kind of a...
Why is this working?
Correct.
It always works when Joe says it's
particularly the box kicks as well, because we got no return from our box kicks, did we?
Yeah, that's never happened before.
And they kind of put a wall of 2 or 3 in front of each time. And like it was
I saw Schmidt make that point that maybe we were a bit
but
too
how
nice.
How many box kicks have we got, Joe, in the last 12
months? No, but just on the wall for a second. Right, okay.
They are too nice.
Why didn't they just blast through them a few times or get over to Garces and say...
And I'm thinking, because we're such a disciplined side, and the team deserve massive credit to concede only 4 penalties, given the pressure. And like, they're probably the most disciplined international side in the world. A lot of the referees are
probably, they definitely are.
They are, yeah, they are.
But on Schmidt's point need, that there was a wall of white bodies stopping chasers after a Murray box kick, like, you have to do something about that, don't you?
Which Owen Farrell did to us.
Remember he pushed Dackey and they clashed into each other. It was lethal.
Mm. Yeah, but you could like have been with it's absolutely with but like it's kind of thinking on your feet.
Push him out of the way.
Dangerous, but you gotta play it just to the
reality of the arena and that environment. Yeah, but it was. You'd be surprised. Ireland didn't kind of go. We're being bullied here generally, and now they're the box kicks. There's a wall stopping us running at them.
Yeah, but like I think it's very hard to change your mindset mid-match. I think Ireland probably showed up like it works all the time. We've hammered the All Blacks on this ground.
Yeah.
In, what was it, 2 games ago, was it? No, it was the last international, wasn't it? Oh, no, the USA.
The USA.
Was after the last. Yeah, the last meaning.
So do you think, Rog, they would have believed... See, the reason you're asking about change and plan B, I still think they believed, particularly going in at half-time, at 17-10, saying it's been shaky, it's not good, we're 7 points behind. We did respond from the early kind of sucker punch, but they landed another one. Let's get in, dressing room, dust ourselves off. I think they came out and believed that they were capable of turning it around. Didn't go to plan. There was still a lot of pressure. They get the penalty. The crowd are starting to get a bit of energy, and you sense maybe we're going to, you know, turn this around. And even on 60, up to that point at 65 minutes, even with everything that's gone wrong, we're still there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's the answer, is why they didn't want to change. They believed that if they kept going and what they've done in the past will actually get them an opportunity to get up and win.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
It changed then.
Yeah. Joe Schmidt had a very interesting comment afterwards. He was talking about the pre-game. He said, we were very quiet before the game. I didn't sense the same energy levels I would have had in November when the All Blacks came. If you don't have that mental preparation done, pretty difficult to get a foothold back in the game. I didn't sense it. I didn't feel it. You almost get this vibrancy from the group, and we didn't have it tonight. We are talking about human beings here. There is emotional energy that needs to be switched on collectively. Now, I know you're going to tell me we could talk for about an hour about this. But there's a lot in that, isn't there?
There is.
England coming to Dublin?
That came out today. wasn't it? That wasn't after the game.
No, I think he would have spoken to a lot of the print journalists, which for Monday, which only would have come out today. But
yeah, I thought it was really interesting when I read that as
so
well.
So what do you make of it? With England coming to town, first match out, and there's something off in the group the head coach is sensing? Surprising?
Yeah, it was. It's big comments to make, isn't it, about your players in terms of there was something detectable that he found wasn't where it needed to be. And you know, I think he does. When I was with him for a week, there's a big emphasis on the mind, Jimmy calls it, and it's really, I think Jason does it, the S&C head coach, so that would be kind of part of his portfolio as well, where you know what I mean, there's nothing left to chance. So I don't know, Joe, is the answer. Sure. In terms of, like, I think it's very much an individual process where Team Ireland benefits by the key kind of cogs in the chain,
yeah,
getting their individual prep right, which means the team perform. And, you know what I mean, it's probably in the high 90s, the efficiency. But
did you, because we were obviously at our backs to the warm-ups, did you notice anything in the warm-ups? The only thing we saw, and it looked positive, was the Irish team in a huddle on the TV screens, and Best and O'Mahony and Sexton all said big words and were fired up. And it would have looked, from that vantage point, like it's business as usual here. What were you seeing pre-game? Anything to it?
Just I had that feeling, as I said to
you
a while
ago.
Yeah,
but did you see anything that would support what Schmidt's talking about?
No, not really. I think certainly if you go back and watched, if you look back at both warm-ups, you'll probably notice differences. And it's hard to notice. Mick Galway used to always say it to us, and it was the first time I ever put a huge emphasis on when he was captain of Munster, body language. What, you know, your body language, you must look like you're mean and you're up for it, even if you're wrecked inside.
Yeah.
You must look like that, and it has an effect on guys around you when you look in the dressing room. If a fella's looking like, I'm going to die for this jersey today or this team, it does have an effect, and you do have to build that emotion. Joe's talking about it. It's a fact. Mm. You have to build that emotion. And
is it harder to do it when you're the favourites?
Yes. And, you know, that sense was around there. Everybody felt, well, you know, we're so good now. I think the realists understood and that there was a lot of danger with England. But the question I would say is, and it's a difficult one for Joe if he sensed that, because hindsight's a great thing, because he probably looked at them before last year and they went out and played great in certain circumstances like that. But he had that nervous tension as well about this. Does he give them a rollicking and remind them?
Yeah.
And does that affect them negatively or positively? You know, it's hindsight's a great thing. And sometimes it's just that it's only a couple of percent, you know, and sometimes maybe it's the expectation that this is what we've done fantastically well. Like we ransacked Twickenham last year with a performance of aggression, intensity, application. It was phenomenal, that performance for 50, 60 minutes for the Grand Slam game.
Do you have any worries this team peaked last year, a year too soon?
No, I wouldn't. I was thinking about that earlier in terms of, like, obviously with the World Cup and my previous experience of World Cups and just a massive disappointment associated with them. Then the flip side of it is, why do New Zealand get it right at the World Cups all the time? And I don't know, but I want to figure it out. But I think the next 7 days will tell a lot, Joe. I think it was, you know what I mean, in that situation, your confidence does get a blow as a player. Mm. There's no doubt about it. And as Alan said, it's a great test of character now, because this team hasn't had a test like this. None of these boys have woken up on a Sunday morning with that sick feeling in their stomach, which, you know, I mean, I only won one Grand Slam, which I've experienced every year in a Six Nations game, and it's horrible. But I think a great thing about being Irish, when you're questioned, you usually produce.
Yeah.
So it'll be... it would be tough on Saturday, because it's going to Murrayfield and they're coming up against a 10 that's a really instinctive player, that's playing at the top of his game, that's pulling the strings for Scotland and isn't really too bothered about game plans. Mm. Just plays, you know. So I think I'm looking forward to seeing the reaction, because as always in Ireland, there's an overreaction to this game. But at the same time, I think, as Alan used the word, we have to be realistic in the fact that, yeah, England could come to the Aviv and beat us. But it's probably the manner that that has all of us kind of searching for words. Is it? Or
a little bit confused, yeah. Henshot 15 is the other big talking point. I didn't want to start with that because, as Alan rightly says, this game was maybe more lost up front. But Henshot at 15 is a talking point, obviously. How did he get on, firstly? And you said on Saturday you would give him another chance
there. Well,
so
I was, you know,
expand on all that.
Okay. He didn't get on well. And he actually was. But if you look at it accurately, I'd say his positioning.
Okay.
But, like, if for a 21 play, which is kind of target, same way, reverse play, he was off. But there was other, you know what I mean? He didn't get any attack ball. Sorry. He did. Ireland moved the ball. Do you remember right-hand side scrum, maybe 35, 40 metres from their own line? And it ended up with Robbie Gatchen getting hit in the arm and hitting Stockdale on the ankle, knock on. Remember, that was a big blow for the forwards because we hadn't been in the game, and they get up out of the scrum and they see.
Yeah.
I know well from all these fellas going, Jesus, Roger, will you keep the ball in front of us?
John Hayes would say to me, oh, Jesus, he's at it again, O'Gara. Are we getting up out of those scrum or a ruck? And then if he kicked a brilliant one down the field, we'd be running forward.
They'd be sprinting.
We'd be whistling and happy as Larry. We didn't want to see any ball going across the field.
It doesn't change. Like, you have big heifers in front of you, like, basically. And they want to get up, and it's like they're running for grub if they see the ball. If they see the ball in the 22, they get an all spurt on it because they love to. They'll park up their big arses down in there. In the opposition 22, but if it's their own 22 and they've a bit of work to do, they're slowing off. Henshot, it's, I think, what I'm always fascinated, Joe, is kind of the respect his fellow teammates have for him, and I think how much they rate him.
Yeah.
So, like,
well, it's not calling him into question, but you know, there's an argument he's better at 12 versus 15. That's the discussion.
But I was a bit, I still am, like. Then I have a short memory if I say that you leave Aki out of the team. You know, I thought he was sensational against the All Blacks. I just thought he was, I just thought his footwork was really good, his acceleration, his hitting in D. And they're the boys you want to be measuring up against, you know what I mean? But all of a sudden, no, it's against England. We didn't make an impact anywhere. So I suppose, you know what I mean, the question is Rob Kearney fit? And if he is fit...
Well, he's rusty.
Currently rusty, but class is permanent, as they say. I just think because he's been in the team for so long, it's a little bit of grass is greener syndrome. We always kind of said, well, what's next in the line? Maybe this guy's better.
So I don't understand what you're saying to me then.
Okay.
Are you bringing Rob Kearney back or are you not?
Okay, so if you were to leave Henshot out, okay, if as I see it as a potential coach, if you were leaving Henshot out, and a different 15 comes in and he's the only guy that doesn't play, and there's going to be a reaction from the teammates. The forwards are going to have a poker up their backside.
Yeah,
there's going to be fast ball.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have a way better team performance. You're going to see this guy in a way better light.
Yeah.
So, the kind of selection damage or the hard call has been made. Why not go with it again? You'll say it to me because he didn't play well. I agree with that, but I don't think great players make the same mistakes two weeks in a row or great teams. So, you know, I just.
And if it's a do-or-die match and Rob Kearney's fit and healthy and playing, presumably he does go on 15, in which case, what's your centre partnership?
He's pressing you.
Well, Ringrose is an absolute...
Yeah.
I think he connects the insides and the outside backs beautifully. To Bundy Akius is who I play in the centre at the minute. I just think he's, I think he offers so much at 12, I think. And not to say Robbie Henshaw doesn't.
No, sure, it's a tight call.
I would go... I'd probably leave it the way it was, the back line, and say, OK, guys, I've picked you as a seven for this game. You didn't perform. Here you go. Show me what you got, and then, if not, we have another meeting.
And do you have any misgivings over Aki's passing at times? He was on the ball a lot on Saturday. And
yeah, it didn't pass well on Saturday. Mm. Fair point, Joe. Yeah, agree with that.
And generally, though?
I think he's a nice passer.
Okay. Sexton and Murray. You look at there's so many aspects to this. So, you know, Sexton's last game is limping off against home, and Conor Murray's back from very serious injury and trying to get back to where he was. I'm sure Peter Armani's ribs can't be miraculously fixed overnight. This, a lot of undercooked players out there, which was contributing to the performance, I would suspect, as well.
Yeah, but England are undercooked as regards their confidence and their ability, and they've probably played more minutes, and it counted because the intensity levels were through the roof on Saturday.
So would that give you a certain hope from an Irish point
of
view?
Yeah, listen, I honestly, Joe, like, it's amazing how, you know, and one thing that frustrated me on Saturday, and I have to say it, is the way people left the stadium at the end of the game. I think it's not right. They were all packed in after we beat New Zealand, and you know, people have got to understand that this is sport. We played in so many games over the years where you go out, you try and get your head right for everything, you train well all week, and it just goes wrong. And, you know, they haven't become a bad team. If you're consistently playing badly and wrong, but, like, we can't take away what they've achieved. I do understand that at the top level like that, you're going to be scrutinised inside out when you lose a game. So I'm optimistic they can come back. I think, I agree with Rog, I think he needs to give as many of them. There'll be injuries will dictate the selection for the weekend. Yeah, but Stander's gone and stuff.
That's the worry. Stander's out for 4 weeks, certainly.
And I would try and play as many and give him a chance. But okay. I think Joe needs to stand in front of him and say, lads,
I think your
you're getting a second chance and that's it.
Is key, deliver. Joe. There's nothing... guys with great reputations, and they have, Johnny and Connor have great reputations for a reason. Mm. But when you're out for 4 weeks or you're out for a long time, it has a massive impact on you as a player.
They've often come back and played brilliantly before, after gaps out, so we just assumed they would do it again.
But it's like 4 weeks out, it's really difficult.
Okay.
You know, just there's nothing like, you know, from personal experience, you just love to be playing three games every 4 weeks. Okay. That's when you feel you're humming.
Right.
And you're just, it just happens naturally for you. You know, I mean, you're out of the game for a month. Everything after that period of time, it's the first time restarting. It's the first time you've no rhythm. But you will get rhythm if your team is on the front foot. There's no way you'll get rhythm if you're in a battle royal.
Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. And we are looking ahead to Murrayfield. So we saw the Scots beat the Italians, and it's hard to learn too much from that. On the assumption that Devon Toner doesn't make it for a moment, which is a distinct possibility, Keith Earls is going to be managed across the week. He's got a hip issue. Suddenly you're looking at Quinn Roo and James Ryan in the second row. CJ Stander is out. So there's a few decisions there in the back row, Quinny. Does O'Brien come in at eight? Does Jack Conan come in as a more specialist eight? How does all that work?
It's an option of playing O'Brien at eight. He's played there before. I'd probably just go with specialist Jack Conan.
Okay.
And if you want to get O'Brien involved, maybe, you know, you've got to get him on the field earlier and at the weekend. Again, he's a guy who's just coming back from another long-term injury. He's an incredible player, and he's someone that it's brilliant to see him back. The issue here is, a few weeks ago, we're probably talking about the great depth in the second row. We've Henderson and Tadhg Byrne are out injured at the moment.
Yeah.
And they're two guys that you'd love to have an option to throw back in, because they just bring a real energy and non-stop around the field. Unfortunately, they're not there. But look, Quinn Roo will have to step up to the plate, and he brings a physicality. He's not a natural kind of ball player. He's a bit of a brute, and he's very, very physical in the carries and stuff.
What's the Scottish line-out like?
It's good. Ben Toulis and Grant Gilchrist, they were up against Italy on Saturday, and they were very dominant. They're two very good players. Richie in the back row to seven, you know, he can be a superb player for Edinburgh. He's only 22. And Ryan Wilson, the eighth. So they have a lot of competitive, aggressive guys. Johnny Gray wasn't playing on Saturday. Yeah. I just think that overall, it's the injuries don't help the situation, but it's just about focusing the minds this week. And I know we're looking at Ireland, and I have to say this, and we've all criticised Eddie Jones and had a pop off him for the last year, a few years, but he put a master plan of a game plan and tactically got it really right at the weekend. And we have to acknowledge that, look, England were the better side.
No, it's true. I mean, look, it's the Eddie Jones resurrection, isn't it? Because he was in a bad place around this time last year, and it was a fragile situation coming into the Six Nations, but suddenly, with the World Cup coming into view, they're looking great.
He was booed at the Leinster Wasps game, wasn't he, when he appeared on the big screen, so it just shows how fickle the whole thing is.
He'd probably be booed the next day again. That's not going to change. But
they look, I mean, England are back, aren't they, in a big way based on that?
Yeah, he really got the mindset, I think, right for this game.
They have France at Twickenham.
Do you know what I mean? His assistant coaches deserve a lot of credit too. Mm. Like, they're new enough into their job, but you could see a distinct difference in kind of even... There's some lovely attack wrinkles England did. You look at the first 90 seconds when they, you know what I mean, they caught us with different angles. And then you look at before Elliot Daly put the chip through, like, just, you know what I mean, playing through them or playing out the back. So it's hard to know where exactly right. They're going to hit you from. So that's your man, Scotty Weismantle, who was with Montpellier, an Australian. So, you know, sometimes it's... sport isn't all one way, as we found out at the weekend.
Mm. So as we begin to wrap, and we'll do a Q&A here with the good folks here in Vodafone, predictions for next weekend? Start with England, France at Twickenham, we'll work our way backwards.
I think that's going to be a great game, I genuinely do.
Will the French pick themselves up after
misery
of Friday?
I coached when Laurier the six, so I just sent them a text to say what the mood was like a bit, and he was just kind of, as you would be, just disgusted with the errors.
Mm.
But like, for 40 minutes, I know it's but we didn't see 40 minutes like that at all in 2018 in any month from them. So they have a few, I suppose, rocks that they can base their performance on. But it'll be fascinating to see who he picks and why he picks them.
Mm.
England, I think, as we discussed, the amount of emotional energy I think that went into that performance. Let's see now, can they back that up? Because the kind of mantra has changed now.
Mm.
This is England, as Ireland has shown, they've been really effective up to a point, but Ireland are back to zero now. They have to start from scratch.
Mm. So you just go on England, or?
Yeah, I'll go England, I'll go Ireland, and I'll go Wales.
The same for me, yeah. I think England don't even need to play that well on Saturday. France were... I was so excited in the first half. I said, they're back. It's brilliant to see this. Terrible conditions, and then just capitulated in the second half, which was amazing. I think they'll have a difficult job picking themselves up after that, as will Ireland for sure. But I think, you know, they might rattle England a bit. Their emotion doesn't need to be as high this week. They just need to get a win.
Yeah.
Their next big emotional performance is in Cardiff. Yeah,
but it changes very quickly too. I think you take Farrell out of that English team and the opposition, every team that plays them will think they can beat them.
Okay.
I think he's that big a figurehead. I just think I think a special player with a special mentality, but you can see the difference in the team when four players and when he plays. I think he gives belief to the guys around him.
It's interesting, at half time they all stayed out and he was giving them a talking to, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was also interesting the fact that he had the biggest performance when Dylan Hartley wasn't there as a core captain.
I was mentioning the body language. It was all pre-planned. Yeah. It was, they waited at getting off the bus together. I watched them. You know, people usually walk off the bus and go into the dressing room. The first guy got off the bus, he stood, they all got off, they waited, and the whole lot of them on block moved in. Mm. So they obviously said that we're going to show a sign of force in everything we do. Wait at half time, we want people to show up, chests out, we're full of energy, our body language is brilliant, we look organized, we look up for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was, and it has an effect on the group around.
Yeah.
And it gives them energy, and it all worked perfectly for them.
Okay.
But I think we will bounce back at the weekend.
Well, hopefully. Scotland are good at Murrayfield.
Yeah, very good. I mean, we owe them one for 2 years ago, though.
Well, that's definitely true. Once the bus is on time, it's an improvement on things. Great analysis, lads. Thanks so much. We're going to stay and do a Q&A off-air with the good people here. But would you give a round of applause? Brilliant stuff from Ron Nagara, Alan Quinlan.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.